Welcome to The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody, and welcome into another edition of The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Hope you're having a great day wherever you are. I am Jeff Nadeau. We are back here live with another episode. It's Wednesday, and that means one thing. The Sit Down is out. We got a great show planned for you today. We're going to talk about Operation Donnie Brasco. Obviously, one of the great mob films ever is Donnie Brasco. We're really going to go into the film. We're going to go into the show, the whole story surrounding Agent Joe Pistone and his infiltration into the initial Colombo crime family and then mostly to the Bonanno crime family. So a lot to get to, a lot to talk about. We're going to go in detail involving everything. But before we do that, I actually had a pretty cool DM I got the other day from one of our listeners, a guy, J. Thomas Ganser. He's an attorney and he's a fan of the show. And he got to asking me about, he came up with these hypotheticals, mafia hypotheticals, and how I would answer them, what I would do if I was in these situations. Now, obviously, I'm not in the mafia, so they're really just, again, hypotheticals. But we're going to get to them first. We're going to go through them a little bit. Should be a nice little quick little primer to the show, and then we'll get into Donnie Brasco. Obviously, as always, make sure you're checking out us on Twitter. The Sit Down is on Twitter. You can find it at The Sit Down 7. We're also on YouTube. You can find us just by searching The Sit Down, an organized crime podcast, mafia podcast, whatever you search. We put cool little videos up there, do a little live stream action, that kind of stuff. But you know where to find us. And make sure when you're checking out the show, you always give us a deserved rating. And make sure you check out our sponsors. We got a lot of good ones as far as that's concerned. And the good thing about sponsors is it means the show is going and growing. So that's huge. All right, let's get into some of these hypotheticals. And they're really kind of interesting. I never really kind of put my pretend you're this, what would you do kind of thing. So let's check it out. Okay, number one, you are Paul Castellano. You learn your crew is dealing drugs. The crew is really well liked by the rank and file. What do you do? Do you let it slide? Do you give the order to take them all out? Well, look, I've always been under the point of contention that drugs do bring a different kind of look into you than other things do. I always remember in the film Gotti when the Carlo Gambino character, Mark Lawrence, mentions, you know, the feds can deal with certain things, you know, loan sharking and stuff like that, not drugs. You know, that's a different level. You know, and the statutes for selling drugs is a lot bigger and crazier than, you know, a loan sharking or a gambling beef. You throw drugs into it, I mean, that's right below the killing someone kind of thing. So I think for me, I would kind of set the tone from the beginning that drugs would not be allowed. Look, at the end of the day, it's hard, though, because the drug trade is such a huge operation. But it's also, again, an operation that is really going to send you away for a long time if and when you get indicted. Remember, the mob can make heaps and heaps of money. And through the glory years of the mob, you know, with whether it was loan sharking, gambling, extortion, labor unions, you know, the numbers run. I mean, there's so much money and all that different swag, hijacking, all that sort of thing. Now, today, it's harder and harder to make money. So I can understand why today crews get into doing that. But if I'm Paul Castellano, I'm obviously going to set the tone from the beginning. And look, you look at people like Tony Salerno, Tony Ducks Corallo, you know, those guys tried to, you know, kind of put out from the beginning that, you know, we're not going to sell drugs. You know, and most of the time it worked, but you know, the problem is the RICO Act, where they didn't have to necessarily be involved, but you know, they were in a governing body that was controlled and the guy at the top had to deal with everything. So what I would do, I would probably take them out. I wouldn't take money from them either, because then you become hypocritical. All right, number two, Salvi Testa is engaged to the underboss's daughter. Wedding invites have gone out. Hundreds of the guests will attend. The relationship falls apart. you were Salvi, what do you do? Number one, do you go through with the wedding? Are you crazy? It's the underboss's daughter. You're not going to humiliate and disrespect her. It is a death sentence. Number two, you break up with her, but convince her it's her fault. She can at least go to the boss and tell him she won't marry me. I don't know what to do. Or number three, you do what he did and end the engagement and simply tell everyone the relationship fell apart. Well, look, I think I would obviously do what, you know, actually happens. You know, if I decide that, hey, but again, I don't know if I'd ever be in that position. Like, why ask her to marry you and then decide a couple months later, oh, wait, I don't really want to do that. I think you got to be steadfast in your approach and steadfast in the decision that you make. What I would do is I'd probably try to turn it on her in a way. There's something that she does that I'm not a fan of. Or just here's an idea, probably not date the daughters of the boss. That's what I would probably do. As long as it wasn't, you know, if I'm just a normal guy and I date a girl that's like connected to the mob through her father, something like that's not a big deal. But maybe if as a underling, you shouldn't date higher people than you's daughter. That would probably be my thing. So I would probably go with four. I wouldn't do any of that. You can't shit where you eat, as they say. Number three. You are Salvi Testa. You know that the boss and underboss have turned on you. The underboss gives you the kiss of death at a funeral. What do you do? Number one, you do nothing. This is the life you chose, to simply protect yourself as best you can. Number two, you run. You grab as much cash as you can and you disappear and start over somewhere else, hoping you can make it on your own. Number three, you whack the boss who was going to kill you anyway. You try to get Philip Leonetti to take your side and you eventually get promoted by Philip when he has been made the new boss. I would do number three. And I don't for the life of me understand why Salvi Testa didn't do it. I think he would have got Phil Leonetti to get involved as well. And I'll be honest, I'll give you one better. I think Philip Leonetti would do what number two says, where he wouldn't run off without telling anyone. I think he would say, look, this died with my uncle. This isn't what I want out of my life. I'm going to leave all the money to you guys and I'm out. And I think the mob would have let him do his thing. I always felt bad for Philip Leonetti. I've said that before. But yeah, I don't know why Salvi didn't kill Nikki Scarfo. I don't think anyone would be that sad about it. Nikki was a lunatic at any rate anyway. I think people would have been fine with Salvi. He was well-liked. He was good-looking. He was honorable. He was loyal. And he had it in his blood. People respected his father. People respected him. I think you make the case Salvi Testa would still be the boss today if that happens. Salvi was a young man at that point. So yeah, I would I would do number three. I would have killed Nikki Scarfo 100%. Now, I think to throw a wrench in this, think about, let's say the boss isn't Nikki Scarfo. Let's just say it's Angelo Bruno. I don't think Salvi would have been in that situation if it were Bruno, just because, you know, he was well-liked by his father was well-liked by Bruno. So, yeah, I would do number three. I would definitely get Philip Leonetti involved. And I think it wouldn't take a lot of coaxing because I think at that point he had given up on his uncle. Okay, number four. And again, these are hypotheticals sent in by a listener, really just kind of interesting. You're ordered to join the mob today. However, you can pick any position you want. Knowing what you know now, what position would you pick? If it was me, I would pick soldier or associate. I'd fly under the radar, earn my money, and stay out of the way of law enforcement. If I do get caught, I could probably flip on some people and stay out of jail. But if you're the boss, everyone is coming after you. Well, look, I wouldn't want to be the boss because you have the target on the back. Now, I will say I am a leader, I feel like, so I would want to be in control of everybody. But, you know, you mentioned a soldier, and I don't mind that. I mean, I think a soldier's got carte blanche to kind of do all he wants, and he kicks up, and he's not got a lot on his plate. And again, there's no limit of what a soldier can make, right? A soldier can make whatever he wants. You know, there were a lot of really rich soldiers and guys that had really good lives as soldiers. You look at a guy like, you know, Ralph Scopo. Ralph Scopo in the Colombo crime family was a really rich guy. This is a guy that, you know, made a hell of a lot of money in his life. He was very powerful as a racketeer. He was one of the top decision makers in that family because of his connections to cement and concrete unions. I mean, he literally created the Concrete Club, and he never elevated higher than Soldier. This is a guy that made the mob a ton of money. So just because you're a soldier doesn't mean you can't do things, you know? Rank is just rank. And again, I think, you know, the problem for Ralph Scopa was he made too much money. And when you make too much money, the government comes after you. But yeah, I agree with you on that. I'm consigliere wouldn't be too bad, because I feel like consigliere is aligned to only the old individuals, and they're kind of through most of their life anyway. They've made a lot of money. They still make a lot of money, and they really don't have a ton of a target on their back. They really just kind of offer their opinion and consult and stuff. So that wouldn't be bad either, because you're respected and you're often older anyway and rich. So not that as older, you don't want to, you know, no one wants to go to jail, but, and I feel like if you're 80 years old and you're a consigliere and you get jammed up, a lot of the time, you know, the government's going to give you a break because you're so old anyway. So maybe go that way. All right. I think this is the last one. There might be one or two more. Number five, you meet a beautiful woman. She is drop dead gorgeous, funny, and interesting. You go out on a few dates and you think you could really fall for her. On your fifth date, she tells you that her father is the boss of an OC family. Do you continue to see her? Absolutely. Absolutely. Am I going to say something right now that'll get me in trouble? I'll say it. This might be like a dream, to be honest. I would love this. Now, I don't know if you would like what I do, but, you know, I've always been under the thought of, now this is a good question, because, you know, obviously you want your in-laws or the people that you're dating, you want their family to like you. But, you know, I guess what kind of boss is he? You know, if a certain boss of the Genovese's daughter, you know, goes after me and wants to date me, yeah, I'm dating her. Do I want to date like Carmine Galanti's kid? Or look at Vito Borelli and Paul Castellano. That didn't work out. I would definitely probably stop doing this, which would suck because I like doing this a lot. But yeah, you know, I think if you find a good woman, you know, it's hard to find a good woman nowadays. So I guess you're talking about like if anyone's ever seen Gamora, so like Azura, who's a beautiful woman. I mean, if that kind of woman comes into my life, it don't matter that her father's a boss of a Gamora family in Rome. No, it wouldn't bother me too much. I would just be on my best behavior. And I would hope that like she understands that, you know, if we break up, you know, it would just be because, you know, we didn't see eye to eye. It shouldn't have anything to do with her father. Now, I think a daughter of a mob boss is in a good situation, because you've got to be a complete numbnuts to ever cheat on a woman like that. Because then, you know, you're getting into some muddy waters there. All right, number six. The mafia has rules, and if you violate them, you're killed. One of the rules is that you can't ignore an order from the boss. However, another rule is not to hand civilians or women. You get an order from the boss, Gaspipe Casso, to kill a witness and his wife. Would you do it? Would you refuse and take your chances? Would you turn informant? Would you hit the boss knowing he's going to kill you if you don't follow through? Well, you know, this is where the hypotheticals get a little disturbing, frankly. That's a good question. I mean, ask Michael Spinelli. I mean, he was the guy that shot it. Peter Sciotto's sister. You know, I think you're in a bad spot, and this is why you shouldn't join the mafia, frankly, especially when the controller of the family is a lunatic like Anthony Casso. What would I do? Well, I guess it depends on how powerful I am. I feel like if I'm like a, you know, I would maybe go to my capo and be like, I mean, we're supposed to have rules against this shit. I mean, what are we doing here? But if I'm just like a lowly soldier, I guess I would just have to do it. I mean, that's my, but then again, where in the mob handbook does it says that, does it say you're supposed to kill innocent people? You know, but I would probably have to do what I have to do. That's my job. That's my life. That's why I don't go to the mafia, because I wouldn't want to do this kind of stuff. Number seven, if you're an associate and offered the chance to being a chance to be made without having to hit anyone, would you take it? In The Sopranos, Christopher excited to be made, but he realized it was twice the work and twice the stress. Is it better to be an associate or a soldier? Yeah, it goes back to the question earlier. I think it definitely does. Being a soldier, you don't have as much responsibility. You can earn as much as you want, and you don't have to deal with so much. I would be a little bit more insular, and I would be a soldier 100%. Now, Christopher had killed people. Remember, he had killed Emil Kolar, and he had killed people. So, you know, if there was a way, I don't know. I guess I'd have to think about it. I'd probably want more power, and I'm a guy that always wants more, so I want to be the leader, as I said. So you got to start somewhere. But again, you know, if this stuff were in the 50s, like, I would do a lot of this stuff. But now, no, I wouldn't. Really kind of interesting, wasn't it? I mean, I'm sure you were kind of answering them yourselves as you listen, but that was really interesting. Thanks for sending me that, Tom. I really thought that was pretty cool. So a shout out to you for being a listener, and shout out to you for sending me that. Okay, guys, let's get to Donnie Brasco. But before we do that, we're going to take a little break here on the sit down, and you are going to hear from some of our sponsors. We'll be back right after this. Using the internet is one of the most common things we do in our everyday life. It's now time for you to protect your privacy online, and look no further than NordVPN. What is a VPN? VPN is a virtual private network, and it's a service that allows to protect your internet connection and privacy online. It creates an encrypted tunnel for your data, protects your online identity by hiding your IP address, and allows you to use public Wi-Fi spots safely. And we've partnered with NordVPN, and they're going to give you a hell of a deal as we head in to Black Friday. By using the code SITDOWN at checkout, you are going to get up to 73% off your NordVPN plan, plus a bonus gift as well. Right now, by going to nordvpn.com/sitdown, that's nordvpn.com/sitdown, you're going to get up to 73% off your total order. Now, I know for me, I like to watch TV. I like to check out different things. And I like to surf the internet undetected. You can get VPNs really from anywhere in the world, and it makes things so easy to protect yourself online. Again, using the internet now, it's like a common thing we do. And this service, it pays for itself. It's equivalent to buying a cup of coffee every month, a small price to pay for your premium cybersecurity and access to vast amounts of entertaining content. Keep in mind, there's a 30-day money-back guarantee if the service isn't for you, and there's no risk. So do what I did. Go to NordVPN and get in the game today. Again, remember, by going to nordvpn.com/sitdown, you're going to get up to 73% off your first order. Go get involved. NordVPN, protect yourself online. We're all looking for a way to improve ourselves, whether it's our mental health, our physical health, really health in general. The one of the best resources I can honestly recommend is BetterHelp. Something preventing you from achieving your goals? What interferes with your happiness? Why aren't you happy? We need you to be happy. Life is about happiness. And it's time to get familiar with BetterHelp. BetterHelp will help you assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. Connect in a private online environment in up to 48 hours. It can go quick and go fast. We can get you on board with someone that can help you quick. It's not a crisis line. It's a self-help line, but it's professional counseling done securely online. You can send a message to your counselor anytime, and they have licensed professional counselors who specialize in everything from depression, anxiety, relationship, sleeping, grief, anger, really whatever your issue is. BetterHelp's got you covered and can help you out. Anything you share is confidential. It's convenient, professional, and affordable. Look, as many of you know, I lost a lot of weight recently. Not only has it helped my physical health, but it's helped my mental health. And there are some things that on a personal level I like to get help with. I advise go get BetterHelp now. I want you to start living a healthier life today, just like I have. As a listener, you get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/sitdown. Again, join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health Again, that's betterhelp.com/sitdown. All right, welcome back to the sit down. We are talking today about Operation Donnie Brasco. Obviously, that was the code name that Joe Pistone would use to infiltrate the Bonanno crime family. Let's get to it. Donnie Brasco on the sit down. So we're going to kind of go a little bit different from our norm, just because we're not going into Joe Pistone's life story. I'm just going to really kind of talk a little bit about his background and kind of how he came in to become into the FBI and that sort of thing. Joe Pistone actually was from Erie, Pennsylvania. He actually would be born there in 1939. And his family, who were Sicilian, they actually moved to New Jersey. He would attend Eastside High School in Patterson and then go to William Patterson University and get a degree in anthropology. So, you know, he had a pretty good start to his life. He was a smart guy. And this is so different from anyone else we've talked about. It's interesting because, again, Joe Pistone was a cop. He was not a mobster. Now, right out of school, he actually became a teacher. He worked at a school in Patterson, but he had always said that he always wanted to be a cop, and he would eventually be sworn into the FBI, into the Office of Naval Intelligence, and be assigned down to Florida. Now, during this time, hijacking was obviously a hot button issue. And weirdly enough, he had actually during college driven a truck, an 18 wheeler, and not many people in the bureau had the ability to do that. So they would send him to deal with like the hijack units and things like that out of the airports in New York. And he would be involved with infiltrating different vehicle theft rings and things like that. So Joe Pistone was, I think, a quick natural at going undercover and being a different character and kind of being able to infiltrate things. And that's something that, weirdly enough, J. Edgar Hoover never liked. J. Edgar Hoover was not a fan of FBI agents. He worried about them being killed or being corrupted or whatever. So, you know, the fact that Joe Pistone was able to do this so naturally, it was really kind of helpful. In 1976, obviously Joe Pistone spoke Italian. So I think the FBI realized quickly, maybe that would be helpful. Now, weirdly enough, as we know in the mob, most mobsters don't either speak Italian regularly or don't speak it at all. It's more or less just an English thing. But again, I think in situations where he'd have to speak Italian, it would definitely be helpful. And it would further show that, hey, this guy's one of us. This guy's from the old country, blah, 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 blah. And look, he had grew up in an area that was rife with mobsters. I mean, North Jersey is like Brooklyn or Queens or the Bronx. And, you know, there's mobsters everywhere. I'm sure he was around social clubs. I'm sure he was around that environment. So he understood it. He wasn't some, you know, bumpkin from Nebraska. He knew he didn't stick out. Let's say that. So he decides, and the Bureau decides, that they have obviously big problems with the mafia. He's going to go into that operation. And for the undercover operation, he would be called Donald Donnie Brasco. Now, he would say that the reason they chose him to be a jewel thief was it's not violent. He's not a leg breaker or a hitman. He's just something that's believable. He steals jewelry and he moves jewelry and all that sort of thing. Joe Pistone would actually take this really seriously. He would actually shadow a jeweler. He would go to FBI gemology courses. He wanted to know everything possible about gems and precious stones and things of that nature. And it's a really smart way of doing things. He had the look down. He had the way to act down. He really just needed to know his product because, as we know, there's nothing more impressive than someone that knows what they're talking about and has a grasp of what they're talking about. He would eventually start going to bars that mobsters would frequent. He went to a bar in New York, and he would kind of get chummy with a bartender. And the goal was really just to go to a bar. And if you, and I know there's a lot of people that have done this, let's say your local bar in your city or wherever you live, when you go there regularly, you start to get to know people, you see the same faces, and you start to look like a regular. And that was Joe Pistone's in. His goal was he was going to sit there and he was going to have a lot of dumb conversations. But the goal was, I need to get inundated in this place. I need people to see me as a regular face. I look normal. I look like I just blend in. After a while, he begins to start conversating with people that matter. And there was a bartender connected to the Colombo crime family. He was doing some little things on the side, and Joe starts talking to him about precious gems, and he gives him a couple diamonds. And a couple of weeks later, the bartender comes back and says, "Here you go," hands him an envelope full of cash. And that's really where he begins meeting people. The bartender takes him to an after hours craps game, and he starts to meet people. You know, he meets Anthony Mira, he meets Jilly Greco, he meets people that are somebodies. Now, this would take in upwards of 6 months to even pal around with this bartender. So it was a lot of patience for Joe Pistone, but it was a lot of patience that would end up working in the long run. Now, initially, Joe Pistone was actually connected with the Colombo crime family. He would work for an individual called Jilly Greco, Angelo Jilly Greco, who is a capo regime in the Colombo crime family. And they would start calling him Don the Jeweler. He actually got a name pretty quick. So Jilly Greco had a hijacking crew, and Donnie really starts to assert himself. The problem that Donnie has is certain people are starting to wonder, where did this guy come from? You know, how did we get in touch with him? Certain people in the family are starting to wonder, who's this guy? Who can vouch for this guy? And one of the people that starts kind of grilling him on things is a guy called Patsy Perello. Now, Patsy would end up down the road moving to the Genovese crime family and still around today. He grills Joe Pistone, according to Joe Pistone, for, quote, 5 hours. He starts asking him, you know, who are you? Where you come from? You know, can people vouch for you? All this kind of stuff. And, you know, before you know it, by the end of it, him and Joe Pistone are getting in an argument. And Joe kind of realizes, hey, they're kind of figured me out a little bit. I got to distance myself from them. And he kind of moves away from the Colombo family kind of pretty quickly. Within about 6 months, he had a connection through the craps game. He met a guy called Anthony Mira. Now, Tony Mira is a really interesting individual, and he would be the first connection Joe Pistone would make to the Bonanno crime family. And this is where this would all happen. This infiltration would happen. Now, keep in mind, we'll probably down the road do a show on Tony Mira. Tony Mira is probably, outside of Mad Sam DiStefano, one of the weirdest people in the history of the mob. He did some real weird things. He was a guy no one seemingly liked. He was really irrational. He was, I think, multiple personalities. He was a nasty guy. And he had a lot of weird, like, sexual proclivities. He was known to really insult people, and he beat up women, and he was just a weird, weird person. And we'll, again, do a show down the road on him. The one thing, though, is people respected him because he made money. And ultimately, that's the great equalizer. You know, John Gotti didn't like Joe LaFord. He didn't like Fat Andy Ruggiano, but they made him money, so he just put up with it. Same thing with Anthony Mira. I don't know if anyone particularly liked Tony Mira, but they respected him because he made the money. After about a year of going undercover, he gets close with Tony Mira. He starts palling around. He starts doing things for Tony Mira, and he starts really, you know, rising to the occasion. In 1977, though, Tony Mira would have to flee New York after he's involved in a drug trafficking indictment. He would flee and ultimately, a couple of months later, get caught in Florida, but he would get 8.5 years in prison. Now, the problem that Anthony Mira had was, generally when you find a soldier or an associate that you take a liking to or you have under your wing, you generally would go to the capo regime of the family and say, look, this guy's on record with me, he's part of my crew, and he works under you as well. Tony Mira never did that, weirdly enough. So throughout all this, Joe Pistone links up with a guy called Benjamin Lefty Ruggiero. Now, Lefty was an earner and a compulsive gambler that was in the Bonanno crime family. And according to Pistone and anyone that knew Lefty, Lefty was a stone cold 24/7, 365 gangster. And we'll talk about that down the road a little bit. He becomes very close with Joe Pistone. And if you remember correctly, he would be the Al Pacino character in the film. Now, it's also important to mention, he wasn't cracking parking meters and getting change. He was actually a pretty good mobster. He did have a bit of a gambling problem, and that would be some of his problem towards the end. But ultimately, he was a 24/7 gangster, and he did what he was told. Now, all of the guys, including Donnie, Lefty, they all kicked up to a guy called Mike Sabella. Sabella was the capo regime of that crew in the Bonanno crime family. We'll talk about Sabella's end in the family. So Donnie's moving around. He's starting to really get himself into the Bonanno family. People understand and they like Donnie. They understand the money he can make for them. And him and Lefty go into the bookmaking business. They get really close. Donnie would also tell the family that his cover was he was a orphan and he had no family, just like in the film. And he would really become close. He would go to family outings with the Ruggieros. He would be Lefty's best man in his wedding. And this is what you have to do. You have to get people on your side. You have to get people believing in you and understanding who you are. And Joe Pistone did that at such a high level. They would also meet a guy called Nicky Glasses Marangello. Now, Nicky Glasses was a big timer in the Bonanno crime family. At one point, he was the underboss to Carmine Galanti, to Philip Restelli. He was a big timer. This was a gigantic gambler. He was large scale. And Lefty ran his operations. He ran his bookmaking operations. The problem that Lefty would have is, as I said, he was a compulsive gambler and his debts would become out of control. And by 77, he would have to pay back debts to Marangello and he'd have to work it off through the bookmaking trade. And that's where Donnie kind of came in for the family. Another big thing happened in 1977. The Bureau started to realize that they needed to, they had a lot of things going on with different mobsters. And one of the individuals that the mob was trying to kind of prove was a problem and ultimately indict was Frank Ballesteri out in Milwaukee. Now, Donnie had a guy in the Bureau that was out in Milwaukee, a guy called Tony. And he was undercover as well. Donnie, behind the scenes, cooks up this deal involving vending machines. He takes the idea to Lefty, and Lefty just says, look, let's meet him. We can't just start putting vending machines in other territory. Have a meeting with this guy. See if he's serious. So they go out, and they meet this Tony guy. Now, Tony's full. He's ready to go. He's got trucks. He's got machines. He's backed by the FBI, so everything's good to go. They go to the capo at the time, and everything seems perfect. Now, keep in mind, whenever you're in the mafia, you can't just go into other territories and do what you want. So they had to meet with Frank Ballesteri, and Ballesteri gives his regards and allows them to move the vending machines into that area. Now, Joe Pistone, Donnie Brasco would say that dealing and seeing Frank Ballesteri was a big moment. It was obviously a huge person they were dealing with. And, you know, that was really where Joe Pistone was really playing both sides. He was still providing a ton of information, but he was also helping, you know, ultimately, you know, bring others down or aid in that. In 1979, Donnie and Lefty, at least Donnie, gets introduced to a new individual. By this point, in July of 1979, and as we talked about it in the Galanti show, Carmine Galanti is killed by Bruno Indelicato, Philip or Dominic Bink Trinchera, and Russell Morrow. And that was due to the fact that he was trying to muscle in and be the boss, and people are getting sick of him. So the Restelli faction kills him, and Restelli becomes the boss. What happens because of that is Mike Sabella, the capo of the family that Lefty and Donnie were kicking up to, he's downgraded. And Dominic Sonny Black Napolitano becomes the capo regime in the Brooklyn crew of the Bonanno crime family. He works out of Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And he would also take a very quick liking to Donnie Brasco. Now, remember in the film, he would be the Michael Madsen character. Now, again, Donnie's always looking for ways to make more money, become more respected, and ultimately get more information. So in 1979, he's got a new capo. He's becoming close with those guys. The Bureau realizes that Traficante needs to get looked at. We need to end there. So he goes again to another FBI pal and figures out that this FBI pal has a club down there. This club called the King's Court Bottle Club. We remember that from the film as well. Now, he can't go to the family with the same, hey, I just found out this guy. That would look too weird. So they're out to dinner, and this Tony guy randomly comes up to them and says, and that's another Tony. It's not the same Tony. This Tony guy comes up to him. He's an FBI guy as well. And he says, hey, how you doing, Donnie? Good to see you. You know, the club's doing great. And obviously the mobsters get bright-eyed and bushy-tailed because they hear about a money-making opportunity. So they go down, him and Lefty, to see this place. And it's a beautiful property. It's got golf courses and tennis courts and a big club. And it's hopping. So they go back to New York. They tell Sonny Black about it and say, look, you know, we got to get involved down here. We could really kind of operate more territory down here. And you know, this would be huge. Now, again, you can't just go into any territory. So they go down and set up a meeting with Santo Traficante. Traficante says, yep, you're good. As long as we get a cut, just like in Milwaukee, and they're good to go. So they start moving their operations down to Florida. Now, the King's Court was in Pasco County, just outside of Holiday, Florida, which is near Tampa. So it all worked out from a regional standpoint for Santo Traficante. Now, the good thing about Sonny Black was he's now the control of the family. He was very close with Philip Restelli and Joe Massino, and it all worked out well. Sonny would operate out of the Motion Lounge, which is in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Sonny was from Williamsburg, and he had been out in that area his entire life. Sonny would eventually go down to Pasco County and check out King's Court. He loved it. Everybody okayed everything, and Santo got a cut, and they made more money, the Bananas did as well. One interesting storyline was the boat scene in Donnie Brasco. Now, keep in mind, as far as I know, Santo Traficante was not actually on that boat. That boat was actually just a fishing trip that they decided to take. They had traveled around. They were in Florida a lot, this group, including Lefty, Donnie, and they decided they're going to go out fishing one day. Donnie, the big connector that he is, says he isn't in on a boat. And little do they know, but it's a FBI boat. It's called the Left Hand. So they go out on this boat. Everybody has a good time. They have lunch. Everybody's happy. A couple of weeks later, they're at a restaurant in Miami, and Lefty approaches Donnie about the boat and says, hey, did you know this is an FBI boat? What the fuck? Da 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 da. Donnie just kind of sweeps it under the rug. Hey, you know, we didn't get caught. Who cares? It's all good. Everything's fine. But I think that's really where Lefty kind of started to wonder. And by this point, I think Lefty was starting to wonder about Donnie in general, because Donnie was really starting to become a close confidant to Sonny Black. Sonny Black would at one point tell him, hey, you know, Lefty's holding you back a little bit. Maybe you should start, you know, kind of flapping your wings on your own. But people started to wonder, especially Lefty, after that a boat incident with the Left Hand. Weirdly enough, it was called the Left Hand, and he was Lefty. Definitely kind of weird. On May 5th, 1981, a major event would happen in the Bonanno crime family. Remember, there was a rival faction of three capos trying to make their mark on the family and take control back over from Rusty Restelli. And they were led by Sonny Red and Delicato, Dominic Big Trinchera, and Phil Lucky Giacconi. Joe Massino orchestrates a hit squad to pop out and kill those guys. And that's obviously in the movie as well. Now, in real life, Donnie Brasco was not at the murder scene. In fact, he wasn't involved with it at all. He at one point was said to be involved with possibly in the cleanup, but he ended up not being involved with anything. But just to refresh everybody's memory, the three capos would go to the home. Gunmen would pop out, including Vito Rizzuto, and kill the group. Now, a big part of this was Sonny Red and Delicato almost believed that they were going to be killed that day. And he would tell his son, Bruno, that, hey, look, if I'm whacked, you got to eliminate everybody. Joe Mussino, everybody. So this would become a big thing for Donnie Brasco because Donnie still wasn't made, but Donnie was becoming a big-time associate. And I think Sonny Black at this point really liked him and wanted to give him his button. Problem was, he was an FBI agent and he was not going to kill anybody. So he goes to Donnie and says, look, I want you to get membership later this year, but I need you to take care of Bruno and Delicato. By this point, Bruno had fled, and we obviously have seen that in the film. I think Brian Miranda was his name. He was the character. Remember, they get him on the boat. Ultimately, the FBI would end Operation Donnie Brasco in July of that year in 1981. And I think the FBI realized that we were getting into very murky waters here. You know, Donnie was doing things, but he can't be involved in a murder. And I think they were close. When you get a murder contract in the mob, you have to fulfill it. Now, whether it's you or someone else that does it, you have to be there. You have to be involved. So again, you're a conspirator to murder, whether you do it or you don't. They pulled the plug and Donnie Brasco disappears. Now, this would be kind of the most interesting part of all this. So Donnie Brasco's pulled. Eventually, Bruno and Delicato would get indicted in the commission trial for the hit on Carmen Galante, actually. So he would be gone regardless. But the FBI had to go and tell members of the family what actually happened. So they take a picture with Donnie Brasco and members of the FBI that Sonny Black knew. They go to the Motion Lounge and say, hey, does this guy look familiar to you? You know, that's not Donnie Brasco. His name's actually Joe Pistone. And I've always been fascinated by some of the pictures they show after the fact. And the real pictures are out there. And you just see this malaise look on Sonny Black, on Lefty, on everybody involved. And the movie did a great job at showing that as well. They didn't want to believe that Donnie was actually not Donnie, and that he was actually an FBI agent. Now, a couple of loose ends to tie up. The original person that introduced Donnie Brasco to the Bonanno crime family was Anthony Mira. He would actually eventually get out of prison. He actually made a big deal about the Donnie Brasco thing. He would argue that Donnie Brasco was someone that he brought in and that he should get some of the money that Donnie was bringing in. Now, I think ultimately he wishes he probably wouldn't have did that because that was his death wish at the end of the day. So once Donnie's outed, Mira goes into hiding. Joe Mussino, who is really kind of in control because Rusty Ristelli's locked up, orders Mira to be killed. And he would go to Mira's uncle, Alfred Embarrado, and his two cousins, Richard Cantarella and Joseph D'Amico. Now, little bit of a news and note on Cantarella. I've actually been in talks with him to come on our show, so I'm going to talk to him down the road. He did become an informant. But on February 18th, 1982, Anthony Mira would be lured to a parking garage in Manhattan. Cantarella and Embarrado would be waiting, and he would be killed. Quote, in testimony, he took out a key, put it in the box, but he didn't get a chance to turn the box. I shot him at close range several times in the side of the head, said Joseph D'Amico, who was his cousin. So Mira had to go. He was the one that put everybody in connection to Donnie Brasco, and he had to be taken care of. Sonny Black Napolitano would also be killed. His death would go a little bit different. On August 17th, 1981, Sonny Black Napolitano would be summoned to a meeting in the basement of an associate, Ronald Filicomo. Now, Sonny Black knew what was coming. He would actually go to a bar that he enjoyed going to. He would give all his possessions to the bartender and, quote, say, I might not be coming back. It would be a ode to the scene in Donnie Brasco. It's one of the great scenes in mob film history when Al Pacino takes off all his jewelry and tells his wife, you know, if it were Donnie, you know, tell him it was okay. You know, that scene. He would eventually drive to the home of Phila Como. Frank Lino and Steven Canone would take him there. As he would walk in, he would be summoned to the basement. And as he got to the bottom of the step, he was pushed off the staircase and shot to death by Phila Como and Lino with 38 caliber revolvers. Keep in mind, the first shot would misfire. Napolitano would, quote, tell them, do it right this time. They would pump bullets into the sides of his head. He would eventually be found with both of his hands cut off. And that was a sign that he introduced the wrong person to powerful people. So, yeah, the end was quick for Sonny Black. But there's one thing we could say about all the people involved in this crime. They took all of it like men. They didn't run. They didn't run to the cops. They took it like men. It's that simple. And Sonny Black, Lefty Guns, they were stone cold gangsters, particularly Sonny Black. But he was involved in all this and he had to go. Last but not least, Lefty Guns Ruggiero would have a little bit different end to everything. I think Lefty wanted to admit that maybe it wasn't true, but on August 29, 1981, as he's walking to a meeting likely to be killed, the FBI would intercept and arrest Lefty Guns Ruggiero. I guess you could never be more happy to get arrested, but Lefty would be arrested. And in late 1982, he and several other mobsters would be convicted in a six-week jury trial for racketeering. Lefty would, quote, refuse to believe that Donnie Brasca was a special agent in the FBI and not his associate. He also would tell his lawyer, I'll never go against us. And even after Pistone testified against him, he would then change his tune and say, quote, I'll get that motherfucker Donnie if it's the last thing I do. Keep in mind, the government would look to get Lefty to flip. It would never happen, though. That wasn't the kind of guy that Lefty Guns Ruggiero was. Wouldn't matter, though. He would go to prison after getting a 15-year sentence. In 1993, he would get cancer and got released in the early 90s, but he would die on November 24th, 1994. So he did die outside of prison, but he never got Donnie. To this day, Donnie Brasco is still alive. Agent Joe Pistone. It was a little different end for Joe Pistone. He actually did get just $500 for his leadership in this case. He would also get some commandeering medals and things of that nature. He would ultimately retire from the FBI in 1986, but he would testify in other trials, including the Pizza Connection trial. He would testify for the United States sentence and all sorts of other high-end crime commissions. He would also consult with worldwide agencies like Scotland Yard and become an author as well. He also has a podcast, which is very good. I would definitely highly recommend listening to that. It's always interesting hearing Joe Pistone talk. You can find his podcast, Deep Cover, wherever you get your podcasts. Really good stuff. I have attempted to get Joe Pistone on. I actually talked to some people that were close to him. They seemed interested, but it never worked out. Maybe down the road we can get Joe on. I would love to kind of bend his ear about things. Think it would be great. But yeah, he is still alive. He is 82 years old. And I will say one thing about Joe Pistone, if he listens or checks out the show, I'm sure maybe he will. It looks great for his age. Shout out to Joe Pistone. It is interesting. There is a as far as I know, there is still a contract out on Joe Pistone. I don't know how much it matters because I don't think anyone's going to hurt Joe Pistone at this point. But they did put a hit out on Joe Pistone for a while. You know, I always wondered why, like when Lefty got pinched, like why didn't they just bring Joe Pistone in and be like, look, I'm not in the mob. Like, you can believe I did fuck you for sure. They never did it though. just a wild story. The worst case of infiltration ever in the mob. It really never happened again. There have been some really great undercover works recently. Obviously, Jack Garcia did a great job in the Gambino family. But, you know, the Donnie Brasco situation really fucked up the Bonanno crime family. And, you know, this was the Bonanno crime family. And this is what I think for me always put Joe Mussino ahead of a lot of bosses. Now, ultimately, he would cooperate and that would hurt him, obviously. But, you know, Joe Pistone took the Bonanno crime family through the worst of it, even through this Donnie Brasco situation. I mean, Joe Mussino was a good boss, you know, but this was something that had to be taken care of. Luckily, everyone involved took what they had to take like a man. I will say one other thing on Lefty Guns. Due to Lefty Guns standing tall, the mob never hit him back. They let him get a pass for the Donnie Brasco situation, which I always thought was respectful. You know, Donnie fucked everybody, but Lefty stood tall and they gave him a pass. So that's the real story. I guess when we look back at the movie, though, I mean, it's incredibly factual. I mean, there's not a lot of difference. Now, a couple things. I mean, Santa Trafficante wasn't on the boat. You know, Donnie Brasco was not at the Three Capos hit. There's also another thing that I wanted to talk about with the movie. And this was something that they couldn't actually help. But there was a character that wasn't real. They had to change his name, the Paulie character. He was played by James Russo. They actually had to change that. They were going to use a real person. But the real mobster actually sued the film for the way they portrayed him, and they had to take him out and change the name. So that was one thing about the movie that was fake, but they had to just because of, you know, legal shit. But the movie was actually really factual. If you look back on it, I mean, even down to like how Joe Pistone acted, Johnny Depp did a great job. I thought they did a really good job with the film. I actually really love this film. I think it's a top three mob movie ever. The music's great. The casting was awesome. I thought Michael Madsen did a great job as Sonny Black. I would have liked to have seen the Joe Mussino character in it, though. You know, I often wish some of these films they would redo just because I think they could be so good, you know, but you can't fuck with classics, right? That's the show for this week, The Infiltration of Donnie Brasco. Definitely one that I think a lot of people know about, but just a couple of loose ends tied up, something we definitely have to talk about. And I think it's important to realize kind of how Donnie did everything correctly, really. He didn't really fuck up anything. Everything was done correctly. He infiltrated everything the right way. He had an answer for everything, and he was good at what he did. And that's one thing about Joe Pistone I think we have to respect. We'll ultimately never know about some of the things he truly did, but it seemed as if everything was up to bore, and I think he did a good job. I'll leave you all with this, and this would come directly from Sonny Black Napolitano. Once Sonny Black realized that Donnie was an agent, he would tell his girlfriend that if Donnie called to tell him that, quote, he bore no ill will towards Pistone, knowing that Pistone was only doing his job and that if anyone was responsible for taking him down, he was glad that it was Pistone. She would also tell Napolitano. She would also say that Napolitano really loved Joe Pistone and was broken up when he found out that he was an agent. Napolitano could not believe that Pistone was an agent because of the things we had done together, the conversations we had had, the feelings we'd had. And it's a great betrayal, really. And you almost have to kind of feel bad for them. You know, they're gangsters, but, you know, I think Donnie really fucking played them. It's that simple. And they had kind of, I think, weirdly enough, put their hearts out there a little bit. And, you know, they had looked at him as a friend. But that actually was portrayed in the film as well, but it was Lefty that said it. It actually was Sonny Black. But they had no ill will. I think no one ultimately had any ill will. They got played, and that's how it goes sometimes. All right, guys, thanks for listening. As always, I want to thank the questionnaire that we got. That was pretty fun, the hypotheticals. I'm sure people ask what's up with Blackjack. just Blatch is really busy right now. He's actually traveling, wasn't able to make the show. So he'll be back, I believe, next week. Next week, we're going to get into, in my opinion, the weirdest mobster of all time, Mad Sam DeStefano. So if you're a Chicago person, we will talk about Chicago next week and get into Mad Sam, a truly disturbing, weird person. Definitely the weirdest guy in the history of the mob. As always, make sure you give us a follow on Twitter at the Sitdown 7. Make sure you check out all of our great sponsors, and make sure you check us out on YouTube as well if you like our mob content. As always, I am Jeff Nadeau. Thanks for listening. This has been the Sitdown. We'll see you next week here on the show.